Ladies and gentlemen, would you please join me in welcoming Mr. Ernest Green to the stage?
Thank you very much. I want to thank the makers of this video. We'll have to go on the road with it. My daughter, who is in the 20-something crowd, says I should open up the speech like this. I want to take a moment to tell you all this afternoon, I want you to go against conventional etiquette. I want you to take out your phones. Yes, really, put them on vibrate. I want you to tweet, Facebook post, take Instagram photos, share this speech with your social network. She tells me that this is something called live tweeting. I know that dictator regimes, social change, revolutions have all been brought on by tweets, a Facebook post. So as an agent of change, I want you to inspire your network of friends when you feel inspired and moved by anything that happens today. But in seriousness, I want to thank Ms. Clark, the members of the committee, cities of Urbana, Champaign, Champaign County, University of Illinois, for an old Michigan State person. We'll get it together. In fact, I think Illinois plays Michigan State the end of the month, so we'll get a chance to cheer both sides. And Parkland, it is indeed an honor to be here today. I think it's only fitting and proper that today we celebrate Dr. King's birthday a few days before the birthday, and that the federal holiday is also, as you know, going to be the date of inauguration of our 44th president for the second time. Today's young people have a phrase for giving recognition to those that most deserve the recognition, as you did today. It's called giving a shout-out. And I want to give a shout-out to Crispus Attucks, Nat Turner, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, Rosa Parks, E.V. Nixon, Dorothy Height, Thurgood Marshall, A. Philip Randolph, Daisy Bates, and countless others who paved the way for our 44th president. As the video said, 4 years ago, I was invited as a VIP guest to sit on the steps of the Capitol to witness the first swearing-in of President Obama. And if any of you have visited the Washington Mall, you may have noticed that the Capitol is directly across from the Lincoln Monument, a mere half a mile away. And on that day, some four years ago, my mind drifted back to that hot August afternoon in 1963. As a recent college graduate, I stood in solidarity with all those gathered for the March on Washington. I listened, hanging on every eloquent and poignant word dripping from Dr. King's mouth. I soaked it up like a sponge, absorbing every drop of change conveyed in his speech. I moved when he said, "Now I say to you today, my friends, even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." And here I was, 45 years later, I was sitting there to see that change fully formed and embodied in front of me on Inauguration Day. The son of a white Kansas school teacher and a Kenyan businessman, President Obama truly personifies the hopes and aspirations of many named and unnamed ancestors who were stripped from the bosom of their homeland, who endured and survived the Middle Passage, who not only held on, but never gave up their dream of freedom and the desire to triumph against insurmountable odds. Those brave men and women whose tears, prayers, hopes, and dreams created the environment of hope that allowed President Obama to take the oath of the presidency. We cannot all be president, but we all can be agents of change. Now, an agent of change is every single one of you in this room. It is every person beyond this room. Agents of change came generations before you and still exist generations after you. An agent of change is a singular individual with the dream of a better tomorrow, be it for themselves, their future generations to come, or for all of mankind. It is that person that feels those slow burning embers that make a difference every single morning that they wake up. Those embers are stoked with every person they meet, every moment they live, every fiber of their being nudges these embers to burn brighter, because those embers turn to a fire, and that fire turns into an inferno, and that inferno powers them. Every man, great man or woman, be it the Nobel Prize winner with the hopes of changing the way we understand the universe, to the garbage man that wakes up every morning before the sun in hopes that his work will provide the means to open doors for his family, they all share something in common. Dr. King once said, if a man is called to be a street sweeper, he should sweep the streets even as Michelangelo painted, a Beethoven composed music, a Shakespeare wrote poetry. He should sweep streets so well that all the host of heavens and earth were posed to say, here lived a great street sweeper who did his job well. I want to propose to you today five characteristics that I feel every agent of change shares. The first, when faced with an obstacle or a challenge, they ask themselves, why not? I was a junior at Horace Mann with a real love for jazz. In fact, I played in the high school band, a tenor saxophone, so watching this band today was really a high honor. I want to applaud them again. They were magnificent. But besides the music and being a student leader, I had a secret that was really a love for science. I saw myself at that time in the future coming up with the newest scientific breakthrough, being handed the Nobel Prize. In those days, segregation was the law of the day, and separate but equal was the face it hid behind. But as I looked around Horace Mann, there was a stark reality facing me, that the facilities were not equal, nor were they adequate for a future world-renowned physicist. I asked myself why we had the hand-me-down books, why we had the older equipment, why we seemed to be out of step compared to the renovated Central High School, which had a national reputation for excellence. I wondered why separate but equal seemed so far from its term, and why the school, Central High School, was not open to me. When I knew they had the equipment I needed to make my dreams come true, and they were closer to my family home. So when the opportunity presented itself, I asked, why not? Why not go to Central? Why not challenge conventional wisdom? Why not challenge segregation? Why not prove to myself, my neighbors, my city, and my country that change is possible? That I would not let a little thing like segregation stand in my way of opening the world. During the summer break of 1957, a notice went out around Horace Mann asking for African-American students who were interested in attending Central in the fall. Central was selected as one of the first cases to respond to Brown v. Board. Little Rock, Arkansas was chosen by the NAACP because it was considered a moderate southern city that already had integrated the University of Arkansas several years earlier without incident. However, as the summer wore on, Governor Faubus was facing a tough conservative challenger for re-election, and the rhetoric grew to a fever pitch. I think we saw a little bit of that this past fall. As the rhetoric increased, the number of potential students dwindled from over 125 to 10 to 9. A moment that always sticks out in my mind occurred a few weeks into the fall semester. A neighbor confronted me on the street, an older gentleman, African-American. He called me over, and as I stood on my front steps, I was expecting to hear congratulations on my intention to attend Central, or perhaps a few questions about the experience. Instead, this man said, "Why do you kids have to go and do all this? You're just getting all these white folks upset, making it harder for the rest of us. You all gonna leave here, go to college, and we'll be stuck with this problem." Obviously, this man could only see the whys and what was happening at Central. Why do these kids have to do this? Why don't they know the problem this will cause for the rest of us? Why do they want to do this anyway? Little Rock wasn't like most southern cities. But he should have asked a bigger question. Why not? Why not change things for the better? Why not challenge separate but equal? Why not prove that all men truly are created equal and deserve the same opportunities? I knew I could meet the challenge because I thought of those who asked why not when obstacles came in their way. Why couldn't a black woman be treated the same as any other passenger on a bus? She worked just as hard as anyone else, and December 1, 1955 was the day to incite change. Why not? Why not allow that day to go down in history? Rosa Parks did not intend to get arrested as she made her way home from work. Little did the 42-year-old seamstress know that her act of civil disobedience would spark a fire that would start the modern civil rights movement, help end segregation laws in the South, and make her an emblematic agent of change. A second binding simile is an understanding that change is constant and how you adapt to it is paramount. Any law student or a law enthusiast, a person who just happened across a few episodes of the TV show The Good Wife, knows one thing about the law. The law is consistent and solid, but it is forever adapting to the times. In the 1950s, Thurgood Marshall was a lawyer that practiced during a time when the law was constantly being challenged. Young Thurgood's father, William Marshall, instilled in him from a youth an appreciation for the United States Constitution and the rule of law. In the 30s, Marshall applied to the University of Maryland Law School, was denied admission because he was black. This event haunted him and directed his future professional life. He later attended Howard University Law School, and one of Thurgood Marshall's professors, Professor Hamilton Houston, constantly spoke of the need to overturn the 1898 Supreme Court ruling, Plessy versus Ferguson. It established the legal doctrine calling for separate but equal. Marshall's first major case came in 1933 when he successfully sued the University of Maryland to admit an African-American graduate student. And later, as chief counsel for the NAACP, he amassed an impressive record of Supreme Court challenges to state-sponsored discrimination, including the landmark Brown v. Board of Education decision in 1954. He was an attorney for the Little Rock Nine. In fact, Justice Marshall spent a great deal of time in Little Rock and spent many nights in my family home, and we developed a great friendship. The law at that time was being used as a weapon to oppress and disenfranchise individuals. Thurgood Marshall individually knew that you had to adapt to change. Amendments were added, understanding of equality grew, and slowly the law adapted to America's understanding of civil rights for all. Thurgood Marshall, as you know, went on to be the first African-American Supreme Court justice. There he was, sitting in the ultimate seat of adaptability. He had the opportunity to direct change. He helped adapt laws to ever-changing times. And Justice Marshall was quoted as saying, "Today's Constitution is a realistic document of freedom only because of several corrective amendments. These amendments speak to a sense of decency and fairness that I and other blacks cherish." Now, change can be a slightly foreign concept to a teenager. Friends, parents, school, and daily life seem relatively routine and constant to a teenager. Neither I nor the other members of the Little Rock Nine were fully prepared for how quickly we had to adapt to our new circumstances and environment. What was normal before was flipped on its head. What we would consider normal by the end of the year was a far cry from where we started. We knew that there would be opposition. We knew people wouldn't like what we were doing, but we never fathomed what that truly meant. So to approach the school on that first day surrounded by screaming and cursing, mobs seething with its anger ever growing, let me just say we learned to adapt quickly. We learned to lace up our shoes every morning and prepare for battle. We learned that no matter how chaotic things got, we had to stay flexible to the changing climate. And that adaptation was the key to getting through every day. If we had continued to go to Central every day expecting that we would feel like Horace Mann, I personally do not think I would have graduated. I adapted to the situation that allowed me to stay above the noise and continue towards my goal of a high school diploma. Conventional wisdom says you have to go through some things in order to reach your goal. But I challenge that thought here today. From this idea comes the third characteristic. If something is in your way of you achieving your dreams, you may have to go around some things instead of through it. Many people have seen the iconic images of the Little Rock Nine being barred from entering Central by the armed Arkansas National Guard. Those images of teenagers being blocked by armed service members stuck with you. It's a harrowing reminder that hate is strong, and sometimes it is backed up by soldiers with armed, lethal weapons. After that first day, we sat at home for 3 weeks. The only concern I had was whether all that time out of school was going to keep me from graduating like any singular-minded high school senior. We could have been forceful. We could have insisted that an angry black mob fight our way into the building. That would have been the rash and quick judgment that could have put everyone's lives in jeopardy. However, we had been trained in nonviolent protests, cornerstone of Dr. King's resistance. It could easily be summed up as going around the problem rather than charging headfirst into all of the insanity. So we patiently studied on our own and patiently waited for an opportunity to present itself so that we could circumvent the angry mob camped outside of the school. I'm sure if we had been going through all of that now, there may have been some people observing would have called us punks for not fighting. And I bet some did at the time, but we waited patiently for 3 weeks. Our means of going around arrived in the form of President Eisenhower sending the 101st Airborne of the United States Army to enforce federal law to get us in. I'm glad we waited because those same paratroopers that helped liberate Europe, the Screaming Eagles, helped a boy from Pulaski Street get into high school. I don't know about you, but that's one heck of a way to show that going around the problem is sweeter than being bullheaded and charging through. Going around the problem isn't about avoiding a situation. It's about finding an alternative that that is conducive to the mission. It's about waiting for the right moment to present itself rather than trying to force things to happen in your time. It took patience and faith to finally get into Central and make through over 200 days of school. As the school year wore on and the inevitable was coming to pass, I would graduate from Central and our mission would be complete. There were tremendous tensions regarding my graduation. Rumors circulated that I would be assassinated if I attended. I was informed by the principal that I could opt out of graduation and my diploma would be mailed to my house. And of course, I refused that. So the day of my graduation, anti-sniper patrols were positioned on rooftops overlooking the football field. Helicopters swirled overhead. Bomb-sniffing dogs were dispatched. The audience was frisked as they entered, and I must say my classmates kept a healthy distance, I think for fear of being hit by some stray bullet. But in that audience, a little-known Southern preacher named Martin Luther King Jr. happened to be in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, speaking at a small black college, called my mother regarding attending my graduation. And what resonated with me internally were the words my mother often quoted, "God wouldn't bring you this far to leave you now." Later, when it came time to receive my diploma and I walked across the stage to the sound of deafening silence, I knew that the moral arc of justice had bent towards freedom and things would never be the same again. The fourth characteristic can be summarized as, no matter how big the obstacle may appear, you cannot let it stop you. No matter how big or how small, sometimes your greater obstacles are set up for a great triumph. Or it is said today, let your haters be your motivators. Even now in current times, we see agents of change faced with seemingly insurmountable odds. Malala Yousafzai, a young girl from Pakistan, likely never imagined that fighting for equal education would conversely involve her fighting for her life. Her blog advocating women's education caught the attention of the Taliban, and they chose violent means to try and silence her voice. But when there are greater things meant for you, there's no weapon that can stop an agent of change. Malala continues to fight from a hospital bed, and I'm sure that she's released, she will continue her crusade for change. Lastly, remember, you're not alone in this. It's easy to see the archival footage, civil rights leaders, and listen to Dr. King's stirring speeches, or view the stark black and white images of him in deep thought, and forget that no man is born wise with all of the answers. In reality, Dr. King used his many interactions and experiences with people from all different walks to inform his worldview. From forming bonds with the family of Gandhi to understanding the principles of nonviolence to softening his message out of respect to President Kennedy, Dr. King demonstrated how one can use their connections and learn from them to further their goals. Although Dr. King is remembered as a shining star of the 60s civil rights movement, he was never alone in his struggle. Earlier, I mentioned the names of some people that paved the way for me, and there were individuals who paved the way for Dr. King. Deep down, everyone has a desire to make an inevitable mark on the world, and every single individual helps clear the path for change, whether they realize it or not. Frequently, I urge my children, Adam, Jessica, and Mackenzie, to not only take advantage of their personal networks, but to reach out at those outside their normal sphere of friends. You never know when the person sitting next to you is the next Steve Jobs, Oprah Winfrey, Warren Buffett, or Barack Obama. Get out of your comfort zone, Befriend those beyond your normal group. You cannot be an agent of change on your own. You're going to need to traverse the road with you. But above the network is something my mother taught me. Remember where you came from and respect those that came before you. In this moment, sitting here right now, listening to me, know that you are the product of generations prior who hoped for more, far better, for greatness within their families. There are ancestors that you don't even know, whose blood, sweat, and tears flowed so that you could be here today. No man or woman is an island, so don't be afraid to reach out to those around you and reflect the work of the past and forge into the future. Before I leave this podium, I want to leave you with a quote from Dr. King. I want you to allow this quote to take root in your soul and blossom as you work to become an agent of change. Dr. King said, "I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood could never become a reality." And he said, and I close, "I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word." Thank you, and God bless you.